From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President-elect Joe Biden will be entering office 1 year into a massive public health emergency. Millions of Americans have been infected with the coronavirus, and nearly a quarter of a million have so far died from it. The U.S.'s already frayed and massively flawed healthcare system has been stretched to its limits. But Biden needn't throw his hands up and accept the Affordable Care Act as the best that the nation can do. That is, if the ACA even survives the new pro-Trump Supreme Court. It turns out there are a lot of levers at the hands of a president, especially during an emergency, if he should so choose to use them wisely. My guest is David Dayan, executive editor of The American Prospect. His books include the prize-winning Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud, and Monopolized Life in the Age of Corporate Power. His latest article in The American Prospect is called How Biden Could Give Everyone Medicare on His Own. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So I learned something very new in your article. I had never heard of Libby, Montana, a tiny community of just a couple thousand people, which offers an example of what things Biden could do to actually think about expanding the Medicare program. Why do the residents of that little town have access to Medicare, even if they're under the age of 65?
Right. It's kind of a tragic story. Libby, Montana is the home of a vermiculite mine that was run by the W.R. Grace Company. And this mine leaked asbestos into the atmosphere and caused tremendous health concerns, mesothelioma, cancer, and things like that for the residents of the town. And they had been working through the legal system for many, many years and hadn't gotten relief from W.R. Grace, who refused to clean up the mine. And so during the consideration of the Affordable Care Act, the head of the Senate Finance Committee, a guy named Max Baucus, was from Montana, and he put in this additional piece into the ACA that allows all residents of Libby, Montana to get Medicare for free to handle the issue of the asbestos poisoning of the town. And so everyone in the city of Libby is eligible for Medicare. And what he put in there further is that under the Social Security Act, any other pilot programs could be produced whenever there's an environmental exposure. The Secretary of Health and Human Services can create a pilot to give people suffering from that environmental exposure Medicare to handle their ailments. And this is where the coronavirus might come into play.
So this is actually something that is part of the ACA. It's a very little known part of the ACA. I am assuming it's a part of the ACA that isn't controversial. Yet?
Well, I mean, these people in Libby were suffering for no fault of their own. I mean, they had this mine in their hometown that poisoned all of them. And, I think there's broad agreement across the political spectrum that these people deserved some long-term support for the long-term ailments that they were suffering as a result of W.R. Grace's malfunction. So, you could draw a similar analogy around the coronavirus. People through little or no fault of their own were infected by this disease. Randomly, people have gotten long-term health effects as a result of the coronavirus, and they need to deal with those, and the traditional health system might not be equipped to do it. So you could imagine a future Biden Health and Human Services Secretary saying, okay, just like we did in Libby, Montana, now that we have the authority under the ACA, we can create a pilot for these long-haul coronavirus sufferers to say, you can go also on Medicare and we will handle your bills from the long-term lung, heart, or brain, or whatever effects of the coronavirus.
Right. There are millions of survivors in the United States, and we know that that there's quite common to have these long-term health impacts. And of course, it's too early to tell how long these impacts could last. Then you had President Trump, who himself contracted the virus and who had the state-of-the-art care at a government-funded hospital. This, I imagine, should really frame when we talk about who deserves government-funded healthcare.
Well, sure. I mean, you had the top of the line, a treatment that is available only to a few people in the world, and that's what enabled Trump to bounce back. Now, he doesn't appear to have any long-term effects, but as you mentioned, an untold number of people do, and we're going to have to deal with their healthcare, just like we did after 9/11 for people who had respiratory disease, first responders cleaning up the debris at Ground Zero, in a host of other cases. The government has traditionally stepped in to help those people, and they can do so again with coronavirus. Now, if you want to get really, really aggressive with the statute, it is conceivable that you could say that anyone threatened by an environmental exposure would then be covered under Medicare. And since we're all, you know, part of the country right now, we're all threatened by the possible exposure of coronavirus, and that's how you get a Medicare for all system. Now, I don't believe that Joe Biden is going to go that far. I'm not even sure that he's going to create a pilot program to help long-haul coronavirus sufferers. But the larger point here is that Biden's team needs to think about executive action. We're going to have a Senate that's either 50-50 or in control of Mitch McConnell. And there's just not a lot of legislating that's going to be able to get done under that scenario. And so Biden, if he wants to make progress, if he wants to be a successful president, he's going to need to use the laws that have already been passed and implement them in creative and even aggressive ways to tangibly help improve the lives of the American people. And this is one example of how he can do that.
Didn't Biden run on a platform of ensuring that people suffering from the COVID-19 virus would have government help?
He ran on the promise that nobody would have to pay for testing, for treatment, or for vaccination around the coronavirus. And one way that he could get done the treatment side of it, and maybe even the testing side of it, is by implementing this this measure that helped the people in Libby, Montana. It's specifically known as Section 1881A of the Social Security Act. And that's the ACA modified the Social Security Act in this fashion. And so he can use Section 1881A to say that anyone who has been infected by coronavirus is now on Medicare for purposes of treating the disease. And it's really as simple as that.
We've seen that Biden has been deeply reluctant to adopt a platform of Medicare for all. He's been deeply sensitive to accusations of being socialist. And of course, he was part of the team that drew up the Affordable Care Act, which went up against or was pitted against the idea of a single-payer healthcare system like Medicare for all. He even said at one point during his campaign earlier this year that if by some miracle Medicare for all bill passed Congress and arrived at his desk as president, he would veto it. Now, of course, he made those comments early on during the pandemic. I'm curious whether you think that he has budged at all, especially now that he's done with the election, if he's budged at all on the idea of expanding Medicare.
I don't think he's budged, but if he's going to, you know, satisfy this campaign promise that he made to make sure that nobody who suffers from coronavirus has to pay for treatment, he's going to have to do something using his executive authority. And this is one thing that he can do. Mm-hmm. So Biden really has a choice to make. Is he going to sort of throw up his hands and say, hey, Mitch McConnell holds the Senate and my hands are tied, there's not much I can do? Or is he going to use the existing laws that we have in the United States to really make progress on his campaign promises. And, you know, if he's reluctant to really do anything without legislative action, he's not going to have a successful presidency. He's going to have to use these laws that have already been passed and his inherent executive authority to implement those laws in order to make progress. And there's progress to be made. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, give everybody Medicare. There's progress on a host of fronts involving healthcare that can be made. Everything from lowering prescription drug prices. There's some ways to do that. We write about at our, we call it the Day One Agenda, the agenda of executive action. You can find
it. The American Prospect has that out on its website.
Yeah, you can find it at dayoneagenda.org. One of the things is lowering prescription drug prices by actually seizing the patents that government grants prescription drug manufacturers when they are not delivering those drugs in an affordable fashion. They can seize the patents and give them out to generic manufacturers who agree to produce them affordably. Another thing that he can do is through the rules around the Affordable Care Act, make sure that low-income people, for example, are not overpaying on the insurance exchanges. We've identified about $2 billion extra a year that low-income patients on the Obamacare insurance exchanges are paying. So there are all sorts of ways to make progress, but you got to look at the statutes, look at what you can do without having to pass new legislation, without needing a permission slip from Mitch McConnell, and there's actually progress to be made.
Is it possible that the Affordable Care Act will be thrown out in its entirety by the new conservative majority, supermajority on the Supreme Court, in which case not only would Biden not have those available levers, millions of Americans who get their insurance through Obamacare would lose it?
It's certainly a concern. Last week, a hearing was held in the case, which I believe is called California versus Texas. And it appeared from the oral arguments that there were five justices who were in favor of throwing out this challenge. Both the three liberal justices, John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh, actually all appeared to be in agreement that you would not have to throw out the entire Affordable Care Act based on the arguments in that case. So the Affordable Care Act is probably safe. We obviously have to see the final ruling from the Supreme Court. But even though it's probably safe, for a number of people, it's not fully adequate and needs to be improved. And Biden needs to be able to make progress wherever he can, whether he can get something through Congress that can help improve the Affordable Care Act or improve healthcare more generally, or using his own authority to write rules and help things there.
So when we look forward to the next few months, it certainly seems as though Biden will have a huge challenge before him. A big part of what he has to do is also restore faith that a Democrat can run the White House effectively. There was an interesting article on Wednesday by the New York Times' Jamelle Bouie in trying to understand why Trump ended up doing better than many had expected. And Jamelle's conclusion was that the money that the government sent to more than 150 million Americans didn't hurt. And it's interesting because, of course, the Republican Party is the party that likes to gut safety net programs. And yet, when Americans have safety net programs like Medicare, for example, or Social Security, regardless of where they fall on the political spectrum, they support them. I imagine that if Biden was smart, if he, you know, didn't act like his own worst enemy, as so many Democrats do, that he would see this not only as a moral issue in terms of expanding Medicare, but as a politically winning issue for whoever succeeds him in the party, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that, my view of the election is that enough people were sort of fed up with Donald Trump to want to throw him out, but they didn't actually trust Democrats to improve their lives in the aftermath. And so that's the challenge of a Biden government, is to show that Democrats, it's not just a matter of holding and maintaining the office, but actually using the powers of the office to help people. And Medicare expansion could be part of that. Medicaid expansion, obviously in the states, can be another part of that. It's a rather, you can take the rather cynical take that the CARES Act, the stimulus package after the coronavirus, was only designed to last right up until the presidential election. Most of the features of the CARES Act have expired, and we're just now getting to the point where the reserves that people had built up because of that assistance are exhausted. And now we're in a position where we're in a deadly phase of the pandemic right now. And Mitch McConnell is the lone person who's holding back more relief for the public. He was perfectly willing to do it when Donald Trump was president. Now that Joe Biden is going to be president, he's more reticent. And that's really the problem, is that it's hard to see where you're going to get a deal where you can do something like was done during the initial stages of the pandemic, which did inspire some goodwill on the part of the public. Mitch McConnell doesn't want that to happen for Joe Biden. And so Joe Biden is going to have to figure out other ways that he can get that done and show people that he's on their side.
Right. 12 million Americans could lose unemployment benefits by the end of the year. A national eviction moratorium runs out as well. So, and you're right, the timing was very conveniently, set up to benefit Trump while it benefited people, Americans, temporarily. So the Health and Human Services Department is the department through which Biden could enact some of these executive decisions that you lay out in your American Prospect article. Under Trump, HHS became deeply politicized, as of course happened to so many agencies, with Secretary Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, a staunch Trump loyalist. Do you have any sense of how that department could be rebuilt under Biden? Have you heard anything of who he is even considering to head that critical department?
Yeah, I mean, this is the story of the entire Biden government, right? I mean, they're going to come in to see a pretty shattered administrative state, not just in HHS, but all over the federal government. And it's going to be the responsibility of those cabinet secretaries to restore those various agencies and make sure they're functional. As far as HHS is concerned, one of the names that has been bandied about is Michelle Lujan Grisham, who's the governor of New Mexico. I'd say that she is probably the favorite right now to take over at HHS. That's the main name that I've heard. It's obviously going to take cabinet members and also undersecretaries and staffers and all these people who are thinking creatively about how to use those agencies as tools to improve the conditions of ordinary people. So whoever it is in there, they need to be guided by Biden's directive that we want to make progress, and then they need to figure out how to carry that out. So hopefully we'll see Grisham do that.
And Biden has also named a 13-person coronavirus task force. That was one of the first things he did, which I think was smart, when it was clear that he was the winner of the election. On that task force is a Dr. Michael Osterholm, now quite well-known infectious diseases researcher, who said, who's made the case that if we simply paid people to stay home during this pandemic for 4 to 6 weeks, we could bring it under control, not just save lives, but also help the economy. But of course, you would need congressional legislation for that, right?
Yeah, this is the tragic part of this, is that we actually have almost an end in sight. Vaccine development seems to be going very well. Within a matter of probably 6 months or so, this virus is likely to be behind us. I don't want to be too, Pollyannish, but that does appear to be where we're going. And we just have to get this bridge over to the next 6 months. And Dr. Osterholm is absolutely right. If we just paid people to stay home for a little while and stop this tremendous surge of cases, then we'd be in a better place for public health, first and foremost. And second of all, we'd be in a better place economically. And it's amazing and infuriating that we know what we have to do We know that bars and restaurants, for example, are the locations where a lot of the spread is happening. If we just paid bars and restaurants to stay closed for a while, that would go a long way into protecting the public. We know
and save their businesses.
Yeah. It's like, but we know what to do, and we just can't get the political system to do it. So it's really just tantalizing and totally infuriating.
And you pointed out Mitch McConnell being this lone bulwark against a lot of these kinds of legislation, pieces of legislation. And it, you know, all depending upon how things work out in Georgia, and even if they do for Democrats, we're looking at an extremely slim lead, you know, calling on Kamala Harris as vice president to be a tiebreaker, assuming all Democrats play along and our team players. It just seems extremely unlikely that McConnell's hold on the Senate, his stranglehold on what he's turned, you know, the Senate into this legislative graveyard will continue. It's incredible. Some could argue he has had even more power than Trump these last few years.
You could definitely make that argument. If you look at the legacy of Trump, it's really the legacy of Mitch McConnell, and that's the judiciary.
And he has plenty of time to keep confirming conservative justices even after the election, but not pass any legislation.
The U.S. Senate has become a judicial confirmation factory, and hundreds of these judges will be making consequential decisions decades into the future, long before Trump is gone from the scene, long after, I should say. And of course, the Supreme Court is a perfect example of that. So yes, Mitch McConnell is the unsung star of the show.
David, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in the American Prospect that we've been discussing from our website. Good luck to you.
All right, thank you.
My guest has been David Dayan, executive editor of The American Prospect, author of several books, including Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud and Monopolized Life in the Age of Corporate Power. His latest article in The American Prospect is called How Biden Could Give Everyone Medicare on His Own. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.